Counsel, again, good morning to you. And again, this is the case of In Re Trust Zutaverne. We will begin by introductions of members of the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice. And then by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning, William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Good morning, Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Pappick, good morning.
John Friedenberg.
And I should note that Justice Miller Lerman, who has been appearing this morning by WebEx, is recused from this case. Counsel, Mr. Mattson, are you here with us today?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. And Mr. Guinan, are you here?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. And Mr. Fuffy, are you here?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Now, who is going to be arguing for Appley?
I will, Rod Pewthy.
Pewthy, yes. Okay, thank you. Very good. Do any counsel have any questions before we begin today? Mr. Mattson, then, you may approach and you may proceed. Counsel, while you are at counsel table, please keep your masks on, but when you are presenting to us, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. And with that, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court. I'm John Mattson. I represent Sean and Russell Zutaverne, who are the appellants in this case. We're asking the court to overrule the district court's ruling dismissing my client's petition, seeking removal of a trustee. And the district court also overruled a motion for temporary injunction. It also found that a trust was unambiguous and also excluded some evidence. And we're asking for a reversal of all those findings. Your Honors, I'd like to start with a brief factual background here. This case involves a family cattle operation. It's in Custer and Blaine counties. It's about 22,000 acres. It has been for many, many years. They've been there for 100 years. And this is the Zutaverne family who runs this this operation. Around 1988, Bill Zutaverne, Meredith Zutaverne, Sean and Shane Zutaverne all incorporated the William Zutaverne Cattle Company. And today I'll refer to those individuals by their first name, not in any sign of disrespect, but because they all share the same last name, it would be confusing to refer to them otherwise. All of the children of Bill and Meredith Zutaverne, there were four of them, they all moved away except for one. And the child who stayed behind is my client, primary client. His name is Sean Zutaverne. And Sean basically ran the farm, ran the operation with his dad for many, many years, decades. He started when he was 14. He did it 24/7, 365 days a year. I mean, this was a all hands on deck operation. And under Sean's tutelage, eventually as his dad got older, Sean completely took it over. He was the president. He ran it, operated it. And under his under his control, it doubled in size and it quadrupled in value. So he was a great operator of the ranch. Towards the end of his life, Bill Zutaverne, who is the family patriarch, created a trust, and he took his 38% of the company, and he put that into trust. And he wanted to, the general goal of his estate plan was protect Meredith, his wife, during her lifetime. And then upon her death, his goal was to give his shares, that 38% that was put into trust, to children or grandchildren who are then actively involved in the ranching operation upon Meredith's death. That was kind of the whole kit and caboodle. That was the estate plan, or the main thrust of it. The ownership of the company then is important, and it was that the trust owned 38%, my client owned 30%, Sean. And then from there, it was 38% for the trust, 30% for Meredith, 18% for my client, Sean, and 14% for the other brother, Shane. So dad dies in 2011, and Sean continues to run and operate the ranch. Nothing changes, totally the same. He's still the president. He's doing the exact same stuff he'd always done. And that goes on for 6 years. There's no complaints about mismanagement, that he's stealing things, that he's doing anything wrong whatsoever. But unfortunately, the other siblings convinced mom that it was not fair that dad had decided to put that 38% in trust and give that to the then operating member of the family who was running the ranch, which for all intents and purposes meant Sean, because he was the only person there. So mom's decision, Meredith's decision was, I'm going to give that 38% that's in trust a quarter to each kid. So 25, 25, 25, 25.
Was the trust revocable at this point?
As soon as William died, it became irrevocable. So yes, as of 2011, it was irrevocable. The way Meredith got that done is she had 30% in her own name of the interest of the company. And then she was the trustee of the trust that had the other 38%. So she needed a controlling interest to make that happen. So she used the 68% combined interest and fired Sean, kicked him off the ranch, which he'd worked at his whole life in his 60s, and also fired his son, Russell, who had also been working on the ranch for all that time.
Counsel, and there, your time is going by, and I'd like you to fast forward to the interpretation of 30-3855-7B. Isn't that the heart of your argument this morning?
Your Honor, I absolutely can hop right into the argument. I think that background is really important. Before I get into the interpretation of 3855D, I think it's important to start with standing as just a general matter. If that's okay with Your Honor, could I start there?
Sure.
Okay. Under this court's decision in Abbott, this court said standing for a trust removal proceeding is governed by Nebraska Uniform Trust Code 30-3862. And that says that a petitioner has standing if he or she is a beneficiary. So that's the test. Are you a beneficiary? And if you are, you have standing to seek removal of that trustee. And that statute says that a beneficiary is a person that has a present or future beneficial interest in a trust, vested or contingent. At William's death in 2011, Sean was the only qualified beneficiary. He was there under the trust language. He was the one operating it, so he gets the 38 shares.
At that time, it was still contingent, though, wasn't it?
It was, Your Honor, because there's always the contingency that he could stop being on the ranch. But as of Dad's death, at that moment, he was the only person who qualified under that language.
But is that the relevant date, the date of William's death?
It is, Your Honor, in the sense that Meredith's wrongful behavior actions, which was firing Sean, took place at that time. So one of our contentions is that Nebraska law cannot stand for the proposition that a trustee can remove a beneficiary by their wrongful behavior and then come into court and say, well, you can't question my behavior because you don't have standing. So we think that's very relevant. Furthermore, Your Honors,
Meredith didn't remove Sean in her capacity as trustee.
We would say she couldn't have done it. She could not have effectuated that removal but for her trustee ownership. So she needed both. She needed her individual interest and trustee interest, but for trustee interest, she couldn't have done it. Your Honors, further, Sean is also a contingent beneficiary in that he is a child or grandchild of Meredith, so that at any time during that contingency, and Meredith is still alive, he can qualify as a beneficiary. Under their statement, second of trust, it says, even if a member of a class may ultimately take nothing, that does not prevent him or her from suing the trustee for breach of trust or removal of a trust. And that makes sense. It's the rationale behind the rule is that the beneficiary should have a right to come in and at least ask a court to look at what happened. Furthermore, my client, Sean, is the successor trustee of this trust. So if Meredith becomes incapacitated or if the district court finds that Meredith should be removed, then my client would be the trustee and would make the decision to put himself back in as president and key operator because that's what the family did for 40 years. Sean and Russell have more than a mere expectancy. Under the Mannon and Haberman cases, if you have a mere expectancy, you don't have standing. Under Abbott, we do have standing. Your Honor, getting to 3855D, which is your question, it's a very important question. Abbott faced the exact same issue, and Your Honor authored that opinion. Under that opinion in Abbott, it said that because the other siblings were, they argued that they didn't have a current interest, that they didn't have standing. But this court pointed out that under 38, and I'll just say exactly what the court said. It said under section 3855 does not dictate who may petition for removal of a trustee. Rather, it describes to whom fiduciary duties are owed. And that's the critical inquiry here, because the district court dismissed on the basis of standing. That was the primary reason. So under 3855D, the court dismissed on that basis when it shouldn't have, because that's not the test for standing. Under the statutory language further, it says that a beneficiary's interest can be terminated by the exercise of a power of appointment or other power, then the trustee owes their duties to the power holder. The district court violated the statutory canon called adjustum generis, which is if you have specific things in a list and then a general concept at the end, the general concept is restricted by the more specific terms.
Well, who has the power in this case to determine who is actively operating or in management of the corporation? Who has the authority and the power to make that determination?
Your Honor, I think that would only come about at the end. You know, it would come about upon Meredith's passing.
The time, right? The relevant time in this case.
Right, that's correct. And Meredith wouldn't be the trustee at that point because she would have passed away.
But doesn't the company make that determination who's actively operating or managing the company?
Well, that's true, Your Honor. But I think the real key question is, did the drafters of the Nebraska Uniform Trust Code contemplate a situation where you could have some general power out there hanging around that could happen to eliminate a beneficiary's interest? And then because of that power, the trustee only owes this interest to a power holder out here. The problem with that is under the Nebraska Uniform Trust Code, anytime it lists a power and there's like 6, 7, 8 of them enumerated in the trust code, it provides a corresponding protection for the beneficiaries, because then under the NUTC, they can come in and sue and protect themselves. In this instance, the problem with the interpretation given by the district court and is being advanced by the appellees is that there's no one that Meredith is that the trustee is answerable to. And they're basically saying no one can come in and challenge that. So it's an improper reading of the statute, interpretation of that statute. It shouldn't have been applied in the first place because it doesn't dictate standing, and it was improper interpretation. Your Honors, I have 13 seconds, so I'll hit my last 2 points.
That other power language in the statute, isn't your argument that that's intended to be the sorts of powers that are set forth in a trust or by law under the trust code itself, and not other extraneous legislative provisions such as the Corporation Act?
Exactly. So the may I answer?
And let me follow up also. Does what research I've done suggests that this is not a uniform provision of the Uniform Trust Code, that Nebraska has varied? Do you agree with that?
That's right. And we've never found, in looking for further statutory authority or case law, we found nothing where a court exercised this provision, this other power provision, to eliminate the current interest or contingent interest.
So it would be purely a matter of statutory interpretation at this point?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
May I respond to the other point?
You may.
And specifically to follow up on your point, Your Honor, when the legislature drafted that 3855D statute, they said power of appointment or other power. Well, they didn't want to write in their power of direction, there's just a list of things in the Nebraska Uniform Trust Code. So it makes perfect sense that they didn't do a laundry list of 10 powers, because, you know, every statute would be cumbersome. But then to interpret it in the way that the district court did, you've greatly expanded and removed all of the protections, removed all the rationale. The last two issues we'd submit, those are the last two issues on exclusion of evidence and ambiguity of the trust, I think are kind of side issues that we'd submit on the briefs. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Mr. Huvey, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And you may remove your mask.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Rob Futhi, Fraser Stryker Law Firm. I have with me Mr. Guinan as well, and then also my client, Meredith Zuderburn, who's the trustee of this trust. I want to start by just touching briefly on the issue of whether Sean and Russell are beneficiaries in this case. Now, obviously, they're not listed in the trust, and the provision under which they would become beneficiaries has not come to pass because, number one, Meredith is still alive, and number two, they're not working for the company. But beyond that, regardless of whether or not they're beneficiaries, under Section 3855D, they still would not qualify as people to whom duties are owed. And so that's why we said in the district court and to this court, they lack standing. Now, I want to address, Justice Castle, the issue in the Abbott case that you were raising with regard to whether or not they have standing. And I think if you read the Manin case, which predates Abbott by a couple of years, and Abbott in connection, they can both be harmonized pretty easily. When I read the Abbott case, the court was saying that under Section 3862, a beneficiary can bring a cause of action to remove a trustee. But what the Manin case said was, if you are somebody to whom if you're a beneficiary to whom no duty is owed, then you do not, you are not a real party in interest, and therefore you lack standing. And that was the language that was used in Manet. So I think the way to reconcile the two, and I think this makes sense under how Abbott was handled as well, is to say, well, assuming they're beneficiaries, Section 3862 may give them standing to bring a claim, but if they are a beneficiary to whom no duty is owed, then they're not a real party of interest under Section 25301, and therefore they don't have a duty that's owed to them, they can't have a duty that's been breached to them, and they don't have a claim. And so in that colloquial sense, they lack standing. So with regard to, and let me, before I move on, what the Abbott case also said was, the court recognized Section 3862 granted standing, but then it also analyzed whether Section 3855 recognized that there was no duty owed to the petitioners in that case. And I think in that case, it was determined that what is now Section 3855D, that section was not applicable because Cynthia and Russell in that case had a present right to receive money from the trust, therefore they had a present interest under the irrevocable trust, and so that took it out of the coverage of Section 3855D. Now, with regard to the specific language that's used in 3855D, it says that the power is owed exclusively, let me read it again, while the trust is irrevocable and during the period the interest of any beneficiary not having a present interest may be terminated by the exercise of a power of appointment or other power, the duties of the trustee are owed exclusively to the holder of the power to the extent that the property subject to the power.
So the language of power of appointment does not apply.
I agree. Power of appointment is a term of art used in estate planning and for tax purposes. It has a specific meaning. And so we're not saying that this is a power of appointment as that term is used in the industry, so to speak.
All right. So we're stuck with, as the district court was, the phrase other power.
Yes. And so here's why other power applies here. So as I read Sean and Russell's brief, they stated that other power has to either mean power of appointment or power of withdrawal. Now, clearly it can't mean that, first off, for power of appointment, because it just says power of appointment or other power. So if other power means power of appointment, that doesn't make any sense. It can't mean power of withdrawal because power of withdrawal is a defined term within the Uniform Trust Act. It's under the definition sections. I think it's 3811, if I remember correctly, but it's a defined term. So if it only meant power of withdrawal, it would just say power of appointment or power of withdrawal. So certainly it has to mean other power. So I think it's clear, though, from the text that what other power means. Referencing back, it has to be whoever has the power to terminate a non-present or future beneficial interest under the trust. And that's what's in the first clause of the sentence in 3855D. And so the question then is, in this case, well, who has the power to terminate the future interests that Sean and Russell might have? Well, the only way that they can become beneficiaries is if they're working for the company when Meredith passes away. So who determines who works for the company? The company acting
well,
through...
Well, actually, in this case, Sean, if Meredith... would pass, does Sean become the trustee at that point, or does the trust go away, or where would we be? Sean is named as the next trustee, is he not?
He is, but at the time of Meredith's passing, that will terminate the trust because all the assets will be distributed at that time, which in this case, the only assets are the shares in the company.
But if Meredith becomes incapacitated and still alive, then Sean becomes the successor trustee.
If Meredith becomes incapacitated but doesn't pass away, then Sean, under the terms of the trust, would become the trustee.
And we can assume that Sean, if that were to happen, would place himself back as materially operating or managing the business. Is that?
I think that'd be a self-dealing breach of his trust or his fiduciary duties to the trustees. But I don't think we need to speculate that because. The issue is, if he doesn't have a present interest right now, then he's not owed duties under Section 3855D. And we know that because if you read 3855D, it makes sense with regard to the other provisions in the same section. So under what is now 3855B, it says if you have a revocable trust, the duties are owed solely to the settlor. And the reason for that is because the settlor at that point can strike out any of the beneficiaries. So similarly, in this case, we have a situation where it's an irrevocable trust, but we have a pool of people who are all of Meredith and Bill's children and grandchildren who hypothetically could become beneficiaries, and they have different interests. But under this provision in the trust, they can have their rights stricken out because they'd no longer be working for the company.
Yeah, that's a somewhat of a circular argument, because that takes you back to the meaning of other power. That argument assumes that other power includes the powers under the Nebraska Corporation Act, right?
Well, I would say other power are powers that are similar to a power of appointment. And in this case, the power to work, who decides in this case who works for the company, somebody has to have that power.
It ultimately boils down, doesn't it, to a question of statutory interpretation. What does other power mean, right?
I agree. And I believe that the first clause of Section 3855D makes it clear that it's talking about powers to determine who has the right to become a beneficiary if they have a future interest.
Is that section ambiguous?
I don't think that it is. So I don't think you need to go outside the confines of the statute. But what I will say is that the legislative history on this thing clearly shows that our situation is what we're talking about here, which is where you have situations where the example that was used before the banking committee was, let's say I put my money into a trust for my son until he's 35, and then when he turns 35, anything that's left over goes to the Methodist Church. And in that case, the desire was not to give reporting duties or responsibilities to the Methodist Church, because we don't know what's going to be in the trust at that time when my son turns 35. The point being, Section 3855D is covering a situation that's very similar to the situations that are found above it, where a contingent future beneficiary can have their rights stricken out. And in this case, the way that Sean and Russell's rights could be stricken out is if they're not working for the company. Now, I want to turn real quick to a couple of other issues. With regard to this ambiguity issue in the trust document, the district court properly found that that was not an issue with regard to the allegations that Sean and Russell had made. The main ambiguity is that at one point in the trust document it says, if you're actively involved in the management or operation, and then another section, which doesn't apply here, it says, if you're actively involved in the management and operation. Now, with regard to that, if to the extent that's an ambiguity, it doesn't matter here, because there's no allegation in this case that Sean and Russell were working for the company at all. When they there's no dispute that they were fired. They said they were wrongly fired, but there's no allegation, you know, I'm still, you know, grandma's having me do some stuff on the farm, or that sort of thing. So even if you accept the appellate's interpretation of there being an ambiguity there, even under their interpretation of what it means, they still don't qualify as beneficiaries as well. So with that, I'll pass the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
Your Honor.
We do not. That concludes arguments then in In Re Trust of Zutavern Council. As you leave the courtroom today, please use this side exit. And if you can social distance and wear your masks, we would greatly appreciate that. Again, thank you very much. The court will go on to the next case of the day, Yurtz Hughes. And the next case of the day is McGill Restoration versus Lion Place Condo.